Hey, what's up everyone? It's Nick here, and before we get started with today's video, we're going to have a quick word from our sponsor, which is Citadel 21. Citadel 21 is a Bitcoin cultural zine and displays the best of the best written content directly by the Bitcoin Taco Plebs for the Bitcoin Taco Plebs. You can read all their articles online for free, or even purchase copies of all your favorite volumes. But you got to be quick because they only sell a limited amount and they sell out pretty fast. They allow anyone and everyone to submit articles, so if you're eager to write something, I highly recommend you do it. Check out their website at citadel21.com below. The link will be in the description. And now, let's get on to the video.
All right, what's up, class? This is Optimus Fields at My Living Truth, and we're at block height 667,975, and the current price is $31,060. Nick, take it away.
Hey, what's up, everyone? It's Nick, and today we have a presentation on Austrian versus Keynesian economics. It's just going to be a primer and lost my train of thought there for a second. It's just a primer on Austrian versus Keynesian economics. This is really important when it comes to Bitcoin and just money in general, as whatever economic philosophy you believe in will, I just got off topic again. Sorry, I just had to mute someone. But, yeah, a lot of people don't even know that there are multiple types of economics, and like the economics they teach you in college, because they don't teach you economics in high school or middle school. So the economics they teach you in college is Keynesian economics, and we'll get into that later in the presentation, why that's bad and why they don't teach multiple types of economics and stuff. But this presentation done by Bitcoin Kindergarten, Thomas Justifer in the crowd today, he's been helping us out for a long, long time with Bitcoin Kindergarten stuff, and he's joined the squad, so round of applause to Justifer. We can do that at the end of the stream, but yeah, new member to Bitcoin Kindergarten, and let's go to the next slide.
Yeah, I just want to add, by no means is this going to be like an exhaustive look at either Keynesian or Austrian point of view, but this will just get your feet wet. And so here's the outline. We're gonna first introduce Keynesian point of view, Keynesian economics, and then we'll jump into the Austrian point of view or Austrian economics, and then to wrap it up, we'll show you how does Bitcoin fit in this.
So what is Keynesian economics in short? It was started by John Maynard Keynes. I definitely butchered his name, but whatever. Fuck that guy. This started in the 1930s. Keynesian economics, it emphasizes government actions to smooth out business cycles through physical policy actions and regulation, monetary supply. You know, they control the entire money supply of fiat currency. They print however much they want to, you know, quote unquote, solve, you know, the problems really that they create. But government actions to fix problems have unintended consequences, and it often creates winners and losers. Optimus or Justifer, is there anything you want to add to this slide?
I just want to add that for the listener, for the pre-coiner, for someone new to the space, Keynesian economics is basically the economics that we're currently living in. It's the paradigm that we are all consequence to, and we really can't escape it. It's basically what you see in the news and all the problems that you hear in our day-to-day life is all a consequence of Keynesian economics.
Yeah, when you go to study economics in college, you'll be studying Keynesian economics.
Exactly. So we kind of said it in the last slide, but what is Keynesian economics in short? And what we came up with is it's when governments stimulate, quote unquote, the economy with tax money and newly created money. And this increases the power that governments wield. It has policymakers and lobbyists that benefit from insider knowledge, leading to corruption and further regulation. And a lot of the policies are meant to protect jobs from the effects of market cycles or systematic economic weakness. And it creates serious economic problems, are used as justifications for increased government interventions. So there's a saying that I like to use. It's a problem, solution, answer. And they basically seek out the problem, they offer you the solution, and then inevitably they are the answer to that solution. So you'll see this happen a lot in the mainstream news, where they will focus on one particular aspect of the economy and they're offering a solution, and which inevitably has them being the heroes that come in and save the day. And what this all amounts to is that they, or those that are in power, gain more at the end because, you know, the solution or the answer is obviously giving them more power and more opportunity to print more money and line their own pockets.
Yeah, and they don't really like promote entrepreneurship. Entrepreneurship's kind of like looked down upon a little bit because everything is about jobs, 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 safety, safety, safety. Like, get a nice job that, you know, you may not like, you may not make that much money, but hey, it's a safe job, and you know, it's too scary to go be an entrepreneur or stuff. So they have a bunch of policies protecting jobs and the effects of market cycles, and we'll get into why that's a lot different from Austrian economics a little bit later. But Justifer, is there anything you want to add to this?
I think you guys covered it.
There's one thing I'd like to add. In Keynesian economics, or the economics of the status quo right now, there is a big emphasis in spending. The whole idea, like Nick said, of creating jobs is so that people go out and spend money. And so it's to encourage the throughput of money throughout the economy. So as long as people are spending, then the economy is good and the economy is robust and people are happy because they're consuming things, which may or may not be the solution to the problem. But anyways, here we got a tweet. Justifer, you want to read this one?
Sure. So Keynesian econstrology has become so pervasive that it's widely believed spending is more important to saving for the health of an economy. It's why so many deludedly believe Bitcoin as a payment important when they miss the greatest savings vehicle ever created. That was a tweet by Vijay Boyapati. He was the author of The Bull Case for
Bitcoin savings possible again. And we give the next slide. Okay. This one was a good tweet from Justin Moon, who just talks about one annoying thing about a credit economy is that income verification for loans encourages employment over entrepreneurship. Kind of like what we were talking, kind of like I just said a few minutes ago, is that the Keynesian way and the Keynesian economics, they make it pretty difficult to be an entrepreneur because it doesn't benefit the elites and the people at the top controlling Keynesian economics, because remember, Keynesian economics emphasizes government control and regulation over the individuals of that economy. It's not a free market at all. It's very controlling, and it can be, they can make life very difficult for you as an entrepreneur and just someone wanting to get your ideas out there into the world.
So we got this beautiful tweet or meme explaining Keynesian economics in a nutshell. There's someone sitting on a couch reading a book, enjoying their life, you know, maybe trying to build some skills, learning to improve their life. And then in the next slide, someone throws a brick through their window. The person picks it up, and on the brick it says, "Need window repair, call this number." And in a nutshell, that's how we would look at Keynesian economics, and we'll talk about it a little bit when we bring up Austrian economics. But essentially, you're looking at one aspect of the economy and you are trying to quote unquote create more jobs, and inherently by trying to create more jobs, you are destroying someone's wealth and their savings so that they continue to spend, and make sure that the money circles the economy. And so it gets you in the rat race that a lot of people are in currently, where they don't have any savings, they can't be entrepreneurs themselves, they don't have anything to risk and try to improve and build on their own laurels. They're just kind of stuck at a 9-to-5 and going paycheck to paycheck. And yeah.
I don't hear anyone talking. Is it just me?
Yeah, Jim, we're talking. I hope you can hear this, but
I can only hear you. I don't hear anybody else. So maybe I need to get off and come back on. Sorry to interrupt.
Okay. So just one more thing I wanted to touch on for this meme is that one of the really important things about this meme is that the guy in the chair now has to reallocate his resources to fix the window. And in a normal market where they don't, you know, mess things up for the guy breaking his window, he would more effectively allocate those resources, you know, benefited him in the economy. Economics, they break things on purpose or force you to reallocate your resources to things that they deem important, that they think will create jobs and circulate the economy. But it's not what the people want, and it's not what the market demands. It's just they're forcing you to reallocate resources to things that shouldn't need them. And yeah, the people know better. The free market knows better, and they're trying to intervene in that in any way they can.
Yeah, individuals know what's best for themselves. You want to take this slide?
Sure, yeah. So pivoting over to like soft money and Keynesian economics. So the most common form of soft money is fiat currency. And fiat means by government decree, which is not backed by assets such as gold or energy in the case of Bitcoin. The soft money system kind of causes a high time preference. And so that means that money savers are penalized when the money supply is increased. And what that ends up doing is it encourages immediate purchases over longer term investments that would create value over time or value into the future. And causing overconsumption, which is like kind of what we experience with consumerism or obesity. We've got problems of consumption, not necessarily scarcity, not problems of scarcity.
Mm-hmm. And like kind of going back to what I was saying at like the very beginning of the presentation is like your lifestyle is influenced heavily on the monetary system that you live under. And today we have like everyone is encouraged to spend. I read a statistic that like half the US or something, or half of the adults in the US don't have enough money to cover like a $500 emergency expense, just because, you know, spend, take out as much debt as you can, pay it off later. It's really, really bad. And they try and manipulate the media and, or use the media to manipulate you to tell you that savings is bad and that savings, you know, is bad for the economy, when in fact it's really, really good. And that's what holds an economy strong. And, yeah, I just think Keynesian economics is completely wrong by the past 50 years.
Yeah, I really like this comment that Ben the car man put in our chat, and he said they, as in Keynesian economists, believe that value comes from labor and not what people actually value. And so that's essentially what Jestifer and Nick were just saying, that fiat currency, since it's soft money, since it's easily created, it doesn't necessarily add value to the economy. It just keeps people in the rat race, making sure that they're in their 9-to-5 jobs, laboring away, so that the economy is quote unquote strong. But we'll switch it over to the Austrian view. Oh, we're still on soft money. All right, I'll take this one. So soft money and Keynesian economics. So soft money, or the Keynesian economics, breeds an effect that we like to call the Cantillon effect or the Cantillon effect. I always have a problem with that, with saying that word. But essentially, the effect is those closest to the money spigot prosper as new money enters the economy, inflating away the purchasing power of those saving / holding the money last. So an example that we currently just saw last year is large corporations are able to use cheap debt, almost nearly zero debt, to finance expansion, while the citizens experience asset price inflation. And since they don't have the accolade or the quote unquote experience or just the network, they can't access that cheap debt and thus are thrusted into deeper debt and with no help of getting out. And then this is another example of last year is the quote-unquote K-shaped recovery. Jestifer, you want to jump in and explain the K-shaped recovery, because you have a little better grasp on that than I did.
Sure. So I think in this coronavirus time, we've got the people were talking about like the L-shaped recovery or a V-shaped recovery. What type of recovery are we going to experience? And macroeconomists are kind of reflecting back on this time, like during the pandemic, where the highest earners or like the top performers, like previous to any crisis, are actually performing better now than previous to the pandemic. And those that were not earning as much, they actually are far worse off. So people talk about a K-shaped recovery where, you know, the rich are prospering and the poor are getting poorer.
Ooh. Yeah, that's definitely what happened. This reminds me of when Kramer was on TV and there's that meme where the stock market hits all-time high and we're at record unemployment numbers. So this should be something that people are feeling literally right now, and it's not so fun. Soft money and Keynesian economics increases government role and centralized control. So as we were saying earlier, this rewards government intervention to fix economic problems. So the government is the hero, the white knight that is here to fix everything in the economy, and that's their main role, is to be the central control and the central organizer of the economy. And this de-emphasizes the sovereignty of the constituents via taxation. Taxation is theft, just putting that out there. Also, government policies reward crony capitalism, slash socialism slash communism. As my buddy Nico said in the chat, Keynesian economics is communism. So maybe we'll chat about that one. But the government can do whatever it sees fit to keep the economy running, and it doesn't have any certain defined role. It's the arbiter of money. It has the sole control of money, and it can do what it sees fit with the money. And in this case, we like to say it creates money essentially out of thin air, and with that process comes the outcome of your savings being debased, and thus it's harder for you to enjoy your life. It's harder for you to do the things you want to do because you have to keep working, you have to keep expensing labor so that you can maintain your lifestyle while the assets and the things that you enjoy increase in price.
Mm-hmm. And then they step in and they regulate whatever they see fit. And a lot of the times, like we said, it de-emphasizes the constitutes. I can't pronounce that word. I'm sorry. But I mean, like even today we saw a scenario where the government doesn't see the price of, you know, GameStop rising fit because it's taking money away from the idiots on Wall Street and putting the money back in the hands of the people who were smart enough to, you know, pump GameStop. And they step in and try and stop trading on like TD Ameritrade and Robinhood. It's like, they do things solely for the benefit of the government and not for the benefit of the people actually under that system.
You want to chime in a little, just for
so we.
Let's see. At least in the U.S., they've got like a dual mandate. So the U.S. has to maintain, or the Fed has to maintain full employment and stable prices, and so people might not think that things are getting more expensive. However, it shows up in different areas of the economy, like healthcare is getting more expensive, and education, especially higher education, is getting much more expensive. So those are the two areas that it pops up. But the area that they're looking at for inflation is actually places where we've actually made lots of like technological efficiencies. So that would be deflationary. And so they actually kind of counteract all those efficiency gains that we've made in order to maintain stable prices, which is inflation. So it's causing this this effect on the economy that is stealing from savers.
Beautiful, Justifer. All right. Here we have what might have been one of the greatest memes to come out of 2020. And this is a perfect example of soft money and Keynesian economics. So this happened on 60 Minutes. If you're watching the podcast, there's the meme of Neil Kashkari right here on the right. But he was asked by Scott Pelley, can you characterize everything that the Fed has done this past week as essentially flooding the system with money? And then Neil Kashkari goes, yes, exactly. And then Scott goes, and there's no end to your ability to do that. And then Neil goes, there's no end to our ability to do that. And this was recorded March 22nd, 2020, in the heart of the COVID pandemic. And essentially what they're saying is that they can steal your wealth at the push of a button, and they can do it essentially until infinity. So that's, as we like to put it, one of the ill effects of Keynesian economics is that you can't save, and those that be, the powers that be, those closest to the money spigot, or those prospering from the Cantillon effect, are able to extract your wealth via inflation.
Yeah, and because they can print unlimited amounts of money, it goes back to, it emphasizes government control at the expense of the people under the system. They can print unlimited amounts of money for whatever they want, yet they are constantly taxing us on everything we do, everything we purchase, everything we buy or sell. They're constantly trying to raise taxes to steal even more money from us and then bring up new random taxes for no reason, when they could literally just print the money they want. Like, they don't need to, you know, freaking tax us on everything. And yeah, Justifer?
I think that's it. Let's move on.
Take it, Justifer.
And Austrian economics, finally, the Bitcoiner's dream. All right, so what is Austrian economics in simple terms? So the Austrian School of Economics was founded in 1871. And Austrian economics is based on natural law with no government control or influence. It is free market capitalism. So individuals choose what is best for themselves. The understanding of human action, I think Optimus might be able to speak to this a little bit better than I can, but we can predict the future by the logical actions that humans take on economical problems. So humans will act to eliminate current or future discomfort is one of those key ideas, and the value is subjective to the individual. So that includes choosing what type of money to use. That's part of one of those decisions that we can predict just by individuals' desires and what they're looking for. So Austrian economics drives entrepreneurship. It encourages savings. It encourages risk management so that people prepare for these economic cycles that naturally occur. And there's a down-up information distribution based on individual choices.
Yeah, so this is the complete opposite of Keynesian economics. And just touching on a few points here, this drives entrepreneurship and it drives people to solve real problems that are going on in the real world and actually provide value to people, not just work a job. I mean, like, you could argue that is providing value because you're providing value to a company, but like, this is providing value in like a totally different way because you're solving problems like that need to be fixed in the world and getting rewarded for it financially. Value is subjective. All value is subjective. You know, you choose as an individual what you value, and if you value something at a certain price, you'll pay for it or you'll sell something for it. Super important that Keynesians don't understand, because they think value is by price alone, but no, it's more subjective and there's a lot more to it. Free market capitalism is one thing I wanted to touch on. Is we haven't had that in a really long time. And like, we didn't really have that under a gold standard when, you know, in the 1900s, just because gold was centralized and it was very easy to stop. Like, for one example, Executive Order 612, they were able to make having gold illegal. And it's not having gold illegal, that's the part, it's the part that they were able to round up a lot of gold and take it for themselves and then, you know, control the markets. That's not something you can do really in free market capitalism, in my opinion. But Optimus, is there anything you wanted to say?
Talking on the understanding of human action, in my opinion, and probably the opinion of others, Austrian economics is more of like a human economics. And I don't like to use that word per se, but it deals with the individual, whereas Keynesian economics has to deal a lot more with the collective, like do what's best for the growth of society, let's create more jobs for society, for the economy, while Austrian economics looks and boils down to the individual. The individual knows what's best for himself, and being a rational being is able to make decisions based on what he or she needs at that moment and in their future. So no one can tell you what you know best about yourself. Value is subjective to the individuals, and you will act in the ways that you see fit to eliminate your current or future discomfort. And so essentially, like, it boils down to, you know what's best for you, and thus you should be able to make your own economic decisions without the intrusion of any third party. As long as you aren't hurting someone and you're not trying to steal something from your neighbor or kill your neighbor or what have you, as long as you're trying to provide value to your neighbors, to your society, to your community, then you should be freely able to act and make your own economic decisions. And if you act in the incorrect way, if you don't do the correct economic calculations, then you will pay the price. And no one should be there to bail you out except for yourself. Hence why we say it encourages risk management and saving. Because if you want to do something, well, then by all means, take the risk, save up, you know, be an entrepreneur, go out on that limb. And if it works out, then you should reap the rewards. And if it doesn't work out, well, then you've learned something from the market, from the information that's given to you. And you'll recalculate and you'll make better moves into the future. And in the long run, Austrian economics is a lot more anti-fragile, as we like to say, meaning that it won't be as likely to blow up as we've seen in the 2008 financial crisis, and as well as what we've been seeing in the 2020s.
Yeah, and just one more thing I wanted to add on is that governments will hate Austrian economics because it takes power away from them. And, you know, all those who have power will not give it up. They're scared to lose it. And they will talk crap about Austrian economics. They will say it's wrong for, you know, BS reasons, X, Y, and Z. But at the end of the day, this is correct. Keynesian isn't. And they hate it because it takes the power away from government and puts it in the hands of the people.
Beautiful.
So this is a meme. I love this meme. I've seen it around for a while. The top is a Keynesian throwing a sword, or, you know, swinging a sword at a Marxist, and he's saying, value is determined by cost. The Marxist swings back and says, no, value is determined by work. And then the Austrian just smites them both down and says, value is subjective, ordinal rankings of goods based on preference. Market value is the equilibrium of the personal value judgments of the buyers and the sellers. And it puts it out just perfectly. You know, that value is determined by cost. You know, that's just wrong. Like, if something costs a lot of money, that doesn't mean it's valuable at all. Value is determined by work. That's easily debunked as well. Like, for example, if I gave you a shovel and you went in your backyard and dug a hole for 8 hours a day, that's a lot of work, but providing no value to anyone, you know, it's completely pointless. And the Austrian perspective is correct. And just, you know, there, when it comes to economics, only one can be right. And Austrian just takes the cake on this one.
Beautiful. Yeah, this is one of those memes that not only is funny in how it's put together, but also that, like, the Austrian perspective is just, it's so much longer than what everyone else is saying. But essentially, this is what we've been saying the whole time. Value is subjective, and market goods are based on preference. So, like we were saying, Keynesians will say value is determined by cost. Well, just because something is expensive doesn't mean it's more valuable than in any other good. Like, if you're a value shopper, you know that you can probably buy similar or even better goods at a lower price. And like Nick said, you know, just because you're working hard doesn't mean you're working smart. So those are both easily debunked. And just the last point, market value is the equilibrium of personal value judgments of the buyers and the sellers. It's back to value is subjective. If you're willing to pay a certain price for something, then that good has value to you. Even if you can get that price at a lower or higher price, the equilibrium or the market equilibrium will be whatever you are willing to pay for it. And that is subjective depending on a bunch of various factors and the market at large. So we'll go to the next page. I'll take this one. Hard money and Austrian economics. So Austrian economics is profound champions of hard money. And hard money is the concept of a money that isn't easily manipulated, hence the term hard. So it's not easily debased. It's not easily counterfeited. And this is good for money because if your money can be easily debased, then it's really not worth anything. If it can be counterfeited, easily counterfeited, then again, it's not really worth anything because humans are greedy. Humans will find, not necessarily all humans, but some humans will find a way to steal from their neighbor. And so the harder the money, the easier it is to stop those that want to steal from you. And so again, hard money is the opposite of fiat money. Fiat is soft money. And hard money is free market money. And what that means is that the hardest money will win. And there will only be one ultimately. So what that means is if people are able to choose for themselves what is the best money, then they will make their economic decisions. And over time, they will realize that I want to be saving in the best money possible. If my neighbor is holding a better money than I am, then he can prosper while I literally lose my wealth. And so individuals will choose what they believe to be the best money to save in. And thus, if they're saving in good money, then they're able to prosper and able to buy the things that they want to, instead of kind of the situation we're at now where individuals don't have the choice of choosing their money if they don't understand that they have that choice and they're being left in the dust as assets become out of their price range. And so free market money also has the seven characteristics of money, which is acceptability, portability, verifiability, durability, divisibility, scarcity, and uniformity. And so these are characteristics of money that have historically been chosen for the best money. And forms of free market money is like gold used to be free market money until it got co-opted. And as we'll get into, Bitcoin is now, in our opinion, the hardest money. And so Austrian economics, as we pointed out in that Keynesian meme, has pointed out the broken window fallacy, which essentially boils down to economics consists in looking at longer effects of one actions and not just at immediate effects. So like you saw in the Keynesian meme of someone throwing a rock through a window, needing a window repair guy, the immediate effect is that, yes, the glass repair guy gets a job and like, hurrah, we have more jobs in the economy. But the unseen effects and the longer effects in the economy is that the person that had to pay to repair their glass window is losing their savings and thus isn't able to allocate that money where they want to and where they need to. And so if this happens on a grander scale across the economy and society at large, well, then we're missing out on a lot of things that people would want to create and would be able to create because they have to survive. They have to use what little money they have to, you know, buy the goods and needs, the little goods and needs that they're able to purchase. And if people are able to save and not just looking at the short-term effects of their economic actions and can look at the longer effects of their economic actions, then society at large will begin to prosper and everyone will become richer in the long term. And so hard money in Austrian economics leads to lowering your time preference. Like we pointed out, Keynesian economics has the idea that saving money is bad for the economy, that spending money is good. But if you are able to lower your time preference and hold hard money, then you start to understand that saving money is good and you don't have to complicate your life. You can just, you know, provide value, take some of your profits in hard money, save it, no one can debase it. And then in the long run, you can use that money however you see fit. And like we said, hard money and thinking at a lower time preference, thinking about your future, is making savings possible again. Whereas right now with the fiat currency, with fiat soft money, it's nearly impossible to save in cash.
Mm-hmm. And a few things I wanted to add is that when you say that you choose, like, the individuals choose the money, like, the, you know, the free market chooses the money. And that goes, that reminds me of a Ludwig von Mises quote where he says that governments don't get to decide what is money. The people engaging in business do. I'm not going to accept payment in something just because a government, you know, central authority says I have to accept, you know, their money as payment. I'm going to accept what I deem valuable as payment. And, you know, I will pay people in things that they deem valuable as payment. And right now, everyone mostly accepts US dollars because that's what they deem valuable. And a lot of people probably don't even think about, you know, opting out into a better alternative. But like, I want to touch on the origin of money because there are multiple characteristics of money. These are the main seven that make a really hard good money. And it's, you know, acceptability, portability, verifiability, durability, divisibility, scarcity, and uniformity. If your money does not have this, then, I mean, like all of them, then it may be good money for a little bit of time, but one fatal flaw of all money, it's happened to all money so far except Bitcoin, is that it gets compromised. Even gold got compromised. That was a bit, you know, harder to crack, but eventually it got compromised. You know, back in the day, seashells, you know, they were done. The rye stones on the island of Yap, those got compromised. And this is why Bitcoin is so important when it comes to hard money in Austrian economics, is because it emboldens all of the characteristics of money so good, so well, so perfectly that, I mean, if you look at the US dollar compared to these seven characteristics, it has acceptability. Like literally everyone accepts US dollars. Portability, it's, I mean, you can fold up cash, carry it around. Coins are a bit difficult. Verifiability, sometimes, you know, the clerk gotta hold up your dollars at the store and see if they're fake or real. Dollars are pretty easy to counterfeit. Durability, they're terrible. You can just rip up your paper because it's literally ink on paper. Divisibility, it's only divisible, you know, into 100 pennies. That's not very divisible. Scarcity, I mean, that's just a joke since they can print unlimited amounts and they do print unlimited amounts. It's yeah. And then uniformity, not all dollars are the same as other dollars. And I mean, like, they change up money all the time. Like, there's this whole thing lately about changing the $20 bill from Jackson to Harriet Tubman, which means if they do that, your $20 bills of Jackson will no longer be good, which is just stupid because if your money was truly good, it wouldn't matter, you know, what ink is printed on it. It's just very, very dumb, in my opinion, to have that. So Bitcoin just embodies that altogether very, very well. Christopher,
I just want to touch on one aspect on this broken window fallacy. I remember following, 2001, September 11th. That's right. I never forgot. And let's see. I remember after that attack happened, a lot of people were worried that there was going to be like some recession. following that attack. And I remember learning that the economy actually was performing better than normal because all of that activity happened. But just looking at that's a typical Keynesian look at short term effects instead of the longer term effects. So now 20 plus years later, here we are. I don't know that anyone would say that our economy is more efficient after that terrorist attack. I mean, anyone that has been to an airport can see that we have not improved as far as efficiency goes. That, you know, anyone that has to go through and wait through a TSA line and take off their shoes way after this attack. So I just wanted to illustrate that Austrian economics is looking at more longer term effects and not the immediate effects of additional activity to, you know, fix broken windows and repair buildings.
Yeah, to put this all in perspective, Paul Krugman literally said, look at all the windows that were broken. The economy is going to be better. So if you don't understand the lunacy of Keynesian economics, then I don't know. We'll have to do a better job. Here, let's go to the next slide. As we were just saying, so this literally happened a few days ago. Janet Yellen just got sworn in as the head treasury of the department. And she writes in a tweet, economics isn't just something you find in a textbook. It can be a potent tool to right past wrongs and improve people's lives. That's why so many of Treasury's 84,000 public servants joined the department. Today, I am proud to be one of them. And that's, in a nutshell, everything we've been saying about Keynesian economics. And our boy Guy Swan over at the Bitcoin Audible, or at the Crypto Economy on Twitter, writes, thinking economics should be manipulated to benefit certain groups to quote-unquote right past wrongs is exactly why so many quote-unquote wrongs exist to begin with. Incentive for corruption will be abused no matter the, quote, angels at the reins. The only solution is removing control. Hashtag Bitcoin. And that's what we've been trying to elaborate in Austrian economics and hard money. It's let individuals choose what they see best for themselves, have more down-up control from individual choices, and eliminate the top-down control that we currently see, where the government is the god in the economy and they can do or say whatever they see fit to quote-unquote stimulate the economy.
Mm-hmm. And pretty much what she's saying in this, when she says it can be a potent tool to right past wrongs, they're literally just doing, like, they're trying to fix problems that they started. And then when they try to fix the problems, they just make it worse because their economics is flawed and government intervention isn't the answer ever.
Beautiful. All right, so like we said, we're basically just giving you the tip of the iceberg on learning Austrian economics. If you want to dive down deeper, here's some of the books we recommend and websites. So first, The Theory of Money and Credit by Ludwig von Mises, a great book. And then essentially, like, the magnus opus of Austrian economics, Human Action by Ludwig von Mises. It's a hefty one. It's a big book. Definitely recommend reading it, though. If you want a little more bite-sized information, then definitely check out the Mises Institute website. It's always, always great and filled with awesome resources and even gives you essentially free books in PDF form. And one of my all-time favorite books is Economics in One Lesson by Henry Hazlitt. It's a short read. You can read this in probably a couple of days, if not even like a whole weekend. And it emphasizes everything we're telling you right now in a short read. You could probably just read the first chapter and you'll get it. And again, Friedrich Hayek is a great resource. Just basically read all the stuff he writes, and you'll be down the rabbit hole. And then if you want Austrian economics primer related to Bitcoin, then we definitely recommend reading the Bitcoin Standard by Safety and Amos, one of my personal favorites. And if you're a little more lazy, or you just don't have the wealth saved up to buy books, then you can definitely just jump on Bitcoin Twitter, follow the right people, and you'll get all of this information synthesized in a way that you won't even know that you're learning Austrian economics until you read all these books and be like, oh, I already know this.
100%. I remember when I first bought The Theory of Money and Credit by Mises, and I read the first 150 pages and didn't learn really anything new, because it was all stuff we just say back and forth to each other on a Bitcoin Twitter. It's a great resource, because some of the smartest minds in the world are on Bitcoin Twitter.
Agreed. Nick, take it.
So this just kind of ties it all together with Bitcoin and economics. Bitcoin's the hardest. It's free market money, truly free market money. And before I get into the first bullet point, like, we can see today with the GameStop stock, like they intervened, the government intervened and tried to stop trading of GameStop. You can't do that with Bitcoin. You can't just intervene and say, you know, the Vitalik beater and, okay, can you guys stop trading now? Like, that doesn't fly with Bitcoin. People freely choose to use Bitcoin at their will. Bitcoin is a global marketplace of value, like a truly global, inclusive market base of value. Like, anyone can join. It's not, you know, exclusive like the current financial system that, you know, most people around the world don't even have bank accounts. But like, here in America, we're extremely privileged, and it's incredibly easy to get a bank account. Like, I got a bank account when I was 12. But if you want a Bitcoin wallet, you just got to download an app on your phone and make one. It's super easy. But Bitcoin has a strict non-negotiable 21 million market cap. This is extremely important because you can't make more of it. There's a fatal flaw with gold that the earth is huge. We haven't even begun to dig into the crust of the earth. There is a lot more gold out there. And I mean, you can get cosmic and say stuff like asteroid mining, you know, we'll mine the asteroids for gold and that'll flood the market. While I think we're a long way away from that, it definitely is possible, but there's still a lot more gold in the ocean and just deeper down in the crust of the earth that can and will flood the gold market eventually as gold miners find more efficient ways to mine gold. Bitcoin will just not be debased, and Bitcoin will not be debased, or it's not Bitcoin. Running a full node verifies that the supply is intact. Anyone can run the numbers. That was a huge meme on Twitter, started, I think, by Pierre Richard, but you can run the numbers yourself and verify for yourself, so you don't have to trust anyone about the Bitcoin supply or really anything Bitcoin related. Provide the value and get the Bitcoin. That's kind of like a spinoff we did of a quote that Katoshi said the other week, where she said, you know, provide value and they will come. Bitcoin flows to the strongest hands, the savers, the hodlers with the hardest hands, the hodlers who want the Bitcoin the most. They're going to end up with the most Bitcoin, because the weaker your hands are, the more you're going to spend your Bitcoin or lose it in scams, or just forgetting your seed phrases, or, you know, messing up your wallets or whatever it may be. It minimizes rent seeking. You must provide value. You absolutely cannot acquire any Bitcoin without providing value. I would say the only exception would be like faucets maybe, but you barely get anything for that. If you really want actual solid amounts of Bitcoin coming in consistently, It's like what Gigi said. You have to trade something of real value for your Bitcoin. You can't just really get it for free. Like, you either have to work for it or you have to trade something of value for it. So that's huge in and of itself. It's decentralized. The other week or the other day, we hit a brand new full node all-time high count. So the decentralization of Bitcoin is growing, and you just love to see it because no one authority has any control over it. And you run a node to enforce the protocol rules that keep the Bitcoin network honest and keeps everyone else honest and smites down anyone who tries to be dishonest. And at the end, my favorite is Bitcoin encourages savings. You just hodl your Bitcoin, trade value for it, and hodl it. The problem with Keynesian economics and fiat money is that you risk yourself and your time going to work every single day. And when you get that paycheck, you're sitting on that melting ice cube, as Michael Saylor says. Your fiat is just slowly dwindling away in value, so you have to re-risk it again in the stock market or other investments because money is constantly being printed and devaluing your money. Bitcoin changes the game by just allowing you to save and just not risk your money. You can take your Bitcoin and invest it, but that's totally on you. That's risky. Bitcoin allows you to just truly save, hodl, and carry on with your life. This ends up in wealth creation. And with wealth creation, that gives you way more options in life. Maybe you can retire early, or you can, you know, have enough money to do whatever you feel, you know, like you want to do with your money. Just gives you options, which is great. And it drives entrepreneurship. It really drives you to create and do something of value with your money, because you don't want to part away with your Bitcoin for something that's not valuable, and you want the best for you and your money. And yeah.
Beautiful. Yeah, I would just want to add that fiat is trash. Cash is trash. Gold has been the essential check and balance for the past couple thousands of years on all peoples and all societies. And Bitcoin is an improvement on gold, a 10x improvement on gold. So while gold was in the past the best way to store your value through time, and fiat was an improvement on gold in a certain aspect that it's the best way to store your value through space, Bitcoin is the ultimate improvement on both money technologies, because it is an improvement on basically both those aspects, that it not only is able to store its value through time, but it's also able to move value through space in a way that gold nor fiat paper money was ever capable of. So Bitcoin is the best money that has ever been created. As our buddy Surfer Jim always says, Bitcoin is most likely going to be the most important human invention that man has ever created. And hence why we believe Bitcoin is the hardest, and you should be hodling, you should be saving in Bitcoin. And that is my thesis. But Jessifer, you wanna jump in here?
That's beautiful. Yeah, I think our entire fiat system, since, you know, yield is so low, especially in the bond market, so people are being pushed into riskier and riskier investments, whereas Bitcoin is just good money, and so that you don't have to engage in these risky investments and put all your money in the stock market just to beat inflation, because Bitcoin is attractive, and as more people join the Bitcoin movement, I guess, and use Bitcoin as savings, the higher the value of Bitcoin goes, and people are creating value with that entrepreneurship, And that means that more value is included in the 21 million hard cap of Bitcoin.
Bullish. All right, well, I'll wrap this up with some memes. Gotta wrap it with memes. From one of the most toxic and probably the best debater on Bitcoin Twitter, Pierre Rochard, Bitcoin improves people's lives by allowing them to save money without worrying about unexpected dilution. USD, the US dollar, is unusable for long-term savings. It loses its purchasing power. Gold isn't quite good enough. It just maintains purchasing power, but Bitcoin improves purchasing power. Who doesn't want to improve their purchasing power?
So this is a good tweet by Con. He said that Bitcoin will win because the market will value its superior monetary properties over all competitors, not because of faith, shared belief, etc. This is one thing that a lot of Keynesian economics don't understand, because they were able to grab gold by the neck and kill it and eliminate all market competitors and completely control the market. So fiat currency was just allowed to, you know, rise and become the dominant, you know, form of money we use today. But now the free market is back. There's a new competitor market that is eating away and sucking the value out of all its competition. And because there is no one central head to Bitcoin, you can't kill it. It's indestructible. And I love the quote. I forgot who it's by, but it's like, we need a sly roundabout way to, you know, I forgot what it was, but Bitcoin is that sly roundabout way, is what I'm trying to say. And it's that it's the new king of the market, and all these currencies are falling to it. Bitcoin is going through price discovery, and it's heading to the top of the food chain, and it's finding out where it really truly deserves to be in the market, and it's at the very top.
Beautiful. The quote is from Hayek, and he goes, the people will never be able to take the power out of the government's hands of money printing. It will only need to find a sly roundabout way for that to happen. I butchered it, obviously, but you'll get the point. And that's the end of the pod. We hope you like this. This one ran a little longer than usual, but there's a lot to cover. And we hope that we didn't just ramble and you took something away from this. Jessifer, Nick, you wanna lead us out?
Yeah.
Thanks to everyone that showed up and listened to the presentation.
Yeah, thanks for everyone that showed up. A lot of work went into this presentation, and I'm really happy with it. And thank you all for sticking around for this long presentation. See you next week.
Peace.